In today's episode,
until recently, you can remove the background, replace it with another background, and then turn that image into a video. So the AI actually adds the scene. So you can have just still image. You take like four or five images around it with your phone, and then the AI inpaints the scene and it turns it into a video where it looks like there's a drone like going around it. And that's just one man like with an iPhone and 5 seconds and whatever processing time it takes. But
Welcome to another episode of Creator Lab. I have a very special guest here today, Tom Osman. Welcome to the show, mate.
Hi, mate. Good to speak again. It's been a minute.
I know. Good to have you on. So for people who don't know you or our relationship anyway, we've been speaking for a few years by this point. Never met in person, like a lot of my good friends on the internet, but we will do at some point, I'm sure. But you were based in the UK. I've been in New York. And nowadays you're in Mallorca, right?
That's right.
Mallorca. So yeah, we're going to get onto that a bit later, how you got there and why you moved there in the first place. But yeah, we've been kind of in the same little world. You were working at MakerPad when I think we first connected. And then since then, you set up Shiny, which is a social club or a club online on the internet, a community, which we'll talk a little bit about that in a bit. And you're also on NIA, Not Investment Advice, the other podcast I do with Jack and Trung. Because in the crazy euphoria of last year, with the NFT craze and everything, you sold an Ether rock for, I think, $1.3 million at the time, and you flipped it in like 19 days or something like that. That was the headline. So yeah, we've connected many times, but yeah, good to finally get you on Creator Lab too, mate.
Yeah, it's been a minute, and I think a lot's happened since, yeah. Which we'll get to see across like a few different industries, and yeah NIA appearance is still highest up my
there
list on achievements in the last couple of years.
So. You put that on your CV yet? You put it on LinkedIn.
100% top of the CV.
There we go. So look, like, why don't we tell people a little bit about Shiny first of all? Because yeah, the full name used to be Shiny Object Social Club, but really it's referred to as Shiny nowadays. So what is Shiny and why should people go check it out as well?
Yes, Shiny Object Social Club set up a couple of years ago as just a place that I'd want to spend my time on the internet, and we just built it like as a place to just like hang out with friends and chat about like what's new and interesting across like tech or like no code at the time, like automation, like Web3, NFTs, just chatting shit about what's going on the internet. And yeah, it's just been cruising for the last couple of years. When a bit crazy last year with like NFTs and Web3, and that was like the dominant conversation. And you know, we spoke about it before coming on, where everyone went like full steam ahead into Web3 and NFTs, which was fine. And yeah, it's a Discord server. It's like a website. We've got some info on there, some tools, some membership perks. You've got some NFTs. You've got the token, all the shiny things.
yeah,
but yeah, just a place to hang on the internet.
Awesome, man. Yeah, I'm in there. I'm enjoying it in there. There's a lot of good people. I think especially last year in the hype of everything, like that was a great place where everyone was just, you know, like telling each other about new stuff, especially in a place like that where speed matters a lot. And if you're trying to get a handle of like how stuff like that works, that was one of the best places to be. So but one of the things on your website, you use the phrase hyper-focused on being unfocused. I'd love to go into that a little bit. I don't know if that was written some time ago, if you've rewritten it recently, but curious on that as kind of a philosophy.
Yeah. I don't know. Like when we came up with that as marketing spiel, I think it was basically because everyone at the time just wanted a place to hang out and feel relaxed at. Probably about a year and a half ago, there's like a real trend towards like real rigid communities, like all forum style. Everyone was like long form posting and expecting like long form responses and stuff. It didn't feel much like a hangout. So we wanted to kind of create the opposite, where it like just felt like a hangout. And a lot of communities moved over from like traditional platforms onto Discord. And maybe that was like a Web3 trend too, where NFT projects were big, so everyone just like kind of migrated to Discord where the attention was. But yeah, it was more of a place to hang rather than place to be formal. Like you have like Slack for work and then you have like Discord for just like hanging out.
Exactly. And it was, yeah, I mean, it's a lot of fun. People sharing memes, they're sharing jokes, and like also you're kind of learning new stuff. And like when there's a drop, I remember people would be like, oh, this drop, this is what I'm doing. And like sharing their kind of like own experience doing it. And also like just honestly helping each other out. Cause in, especially 100%. In the Web3 stuff, it was a huge learning curve for everyone, especially, you know, like even me and you are fairly like savvy with the internet, but even for us, you're like, how do I set up a MetaMask wallet for the first time? And then how do I, what is an NFT when everyone was trying to figure that out? And like, why has this gone up so much? And then Tom comes through, has a hammer of a case study with your Etherrock, you know? And yeah, so it was really, yeah, I really have fond memories from that time as well. Now, let's just get the Web3 stuff talked about early on so we can move on to other stuff as well. But
let's do it.
We're in a bear market, if you want to call it that, in the world, not just in crypto. You know, there's stock market is down, real estate
bear.
Is about to, yeah, global bear, recession everywhere pretty much. FTX just collapsed, right, in the last week. By the time this comes out in a few days, it'll be, you know, almost 2 weeks or so. So there's been a lot of crazy stuff. There's obviously been wars and stuff too. There's always been bad stuff in the world, but ultimately there has been quite a lot of bad stuff in like comparing that to the euphoria of last year. So I'm curious, like being a community which was so heavily focused on that and now kind of revising that focus to remind people like, yeah, it's called shiny object. It's not Web3 object, even though Web3 was the shiny object of last year. The whole ethos of what you have is we're going to find the new stuff and share it with each other. So what, how is your sentiment and feeling towards that whole space? You know, especially given like you made a ton of money, right, in that one big flip. I'm sure you also lost a bunch of money if you, you know, were holding it like the rest of us. Mm-hmm. So I'm curious like how those emotions have translated into your core business as well.
Yeah. I don't think like sentiment too much has changed because from like as like a gamer, like NFTs, like a lot of other like gamers online, NFTs like just makes sense. Like you just kind of get it instantly. So bullish still on like NFT tech, and there's going to be everything will kind of still eventually be an NFT. But the like speculation, obviously last year was like great for everybody until it wasn't. So I think there was just like a misalignment of people like saying, oh, I'm in it for the tech. Whereas really, I think most people were in it for
the number
the
go
increase
up.
In asset price potential, yeah. Where there's a period there where you could just create any NFT project and earn $1 million by minting out instantly. All the attention was there, all the profits were there. So it seemed like a bit of like a one in a lifetime situation with the Bored Apes leading the way. So when things kind of flip, I think what happened like with us especially is, and I guess to be fair, a different thing, but everything's fine when it's up only because like all the attention there's always like new people coming in. So you kind of get away with ignoring like a lot of the fundamentals to whatever it is you're doing. Now it's obviously happened now, like with exchanges where we're like, okay, we could always like, there's always another trade. We can trade our way out of it. And then obviously people have got caught being illiquid or insolvent or whatever you want to call it. But I think from a community standpoint, we did probably a few mistakes actually, which we're like correcting now as we like pivoted a lot of our business model into Web3 when there wasn't really like too much of a business model. It's probably still argued that there aren't all those memes going around about like Web3 use cases and there's people just like looking into like an empty box or something.
Yeah.
So we like pivoted our business model into it, which wasn't the best decision because we had like a strong like fiat membership based business model before.
So and then could you explain what that means by you pivoted into it? Because I know using your Discord server and stuff, you had like NFTs that you're selling and then you could log in and get membership using the NFTs, right? Mm-hmm. You also had a token. You still probably do have it, right? Mm-hmm. Shiny token.
Yep.
Is that what you mean by it? Like that's how you were monetizing essentially. Instead of just charging people, you said before a fiat membership where like people were paying with dollars or pounds, normal money, they were paying through your token essentially.
Yeah, so he started off using like normal money, just paying like X amount per year or per month to be a member, which is great. And then when things got really insane and all the attention was into NFTs, we pivoted into like NFTs and a token as a membership model. But yeah, I think that was the mistake that we didn't keep the fiat side. Not so much that we used the token and NFT side, because I think that as like an access model in general is really good. But we kind of alienated a lot of people by forcing it down that way. So if someone like just wants to hang in the community, they want to like jump through all these hoops to buy like an NFT or tokens, and then they just ended up just not joining, or just like,
there's
not
more friction, right? Like completely. And for someone who knows what they're doing, it's not that much friction, but the learning curve, like we said, was so much that unless you were already kind of understanding it all, it was kind of a hard thing. I remember even when I was already in the community, and then I was like, hey, I think I'm hitting a year or something and I need to buy it. And I think I was already in there. And I was like, I don't even know what to pay. And you were like, oh, just buy like the token and like beholding that you'll be supporting or whatever. So, but what I will say about that is I was incredibly impressed. Like last year when, you know, Jack Trung and I had not investment advice, we still do. Mm-hmm. And people are asking us, can you create a community? So for us, our simplest version was a Telegram group, which we still have. And we literally post funny stuff, articles, memes once in a while, and we'll post our episodes and people can comment. And that for us right now is the simplest thing we can do. Discord would obviously be a perfect, you know, alignment with what we do, and people ask for it like every week.
Yeah.
But honestly, it was just a resources thing. Like more than setting it up, it's like then after monitoring it and moderating, it's like a forum and stuff, right? So, you know, if someone comes in there and hacks it and does something wrong, which I know has happened to a lot of people, it might have even happened to your community, like that creates a whole kind of mental burden as well. So, but what I was saying is, if there was anyone, I was like, I'm setting up a Discord. Who am I going to? I'm going to you, because I know you know it inside out, and you did all this advanced stuff, and I didn't even know you could do half of this stuff, right? and that's kind of the general theme of what we're going to talk about today is, you know, having known you for a couple of years, you know, you're generally one of the people I look at as someone who's always playing with the new stuff in a good way, because, you know, I forgot what the old saying is, but it's something like the next big industries are what the nerds are playing with at the weekend sort of thing.
Yeah.
And I've always been kind of like that too, right? Like making stuff and like figuring out the new stuff and being an optimist towards, well, it's not there yet, but what could this be one day? Mm-hmm. And that's what I think brings a lot of us together. So today we're going to dig into a few of the things that in your community and what you're following, you know, the stuff that you're kind of interested in, and some examples of that. So yeah, was there anything else on the Web3 part though, before we move on from that? Like, you were saying some of the mistakes you made, like in terms of like your bullishness on the space though, and I guess I would decouple technology and price action or number go up on a separate bucket. Like, how do you feel about it compared to like the euphoria of this time last year?
I think because of the price action, the good underlying stuff just gets like, not like ignored, but the people who arrived in the space for the price action or the people that entered early and then had like big wins, everything else ends up being kind of skewed. And if you take Nike, like buying like Artifact, and then you take like Adidas and all these like huge brands that are coming in and building like technology on top, they maybe not so much Nike, because they like acquired, so they were way ahead of the game with buying Artifact, but all the brands are paying catch up, so they might have seen it last year, and just the processes is slower, so all this good stuff is now like coming to fruition. But like timing wise is because the market like is just bad, and because probably in like a recession, it feels like it's just down only. So all the great stuff that's happening just gets drowned out by everyone being wrecked financially, which is a bit of a shame.
Yeah.
But I think when we come out of it, it's going to be like a lot of this is just going to be embedded into a new marketplace. As we saw like Nike talk, I think it's recording today, they had just announced Swoosh.
I was just about to share the screen. Yeah. Nike's.swoosh metaverse platform is here. Yep. I'm just going to share that. For people who haven't heard about it yet, we'll probably cover this on NIA next week. But can you see my screen there?
It's coming up. Should be
a little slow.
My little slow, but it should come up in a sec.
It's a little slow here. Anyway, my video's messing up, so I might have to stop sharing. But anyway, so people who are interested, just type in Nike.swoosh, and you can see that. Anyway, it's Complex's website, man. Do you see that? Do you see how many things are still loading on the website?
Yeah. But so yeah, like all this good stuff is happening, like all these brands are like building some really awesome stuff, but just because of the nature of the market at the moment, I think they're still seen as like luxury goods. I mean, they're like pictures that cost tens of hundreds of thousands of pounds, like JPEGs. So there's always going to be like that disconnect. But yeah, I'm bullish on like digital collectibles in general and like provable digital ownership. So next time around, I think it's going to be front and center of a lot more mouths. So
got it. All right, cool. So why don't we talk a little bit about other stuff? We'll come back to Web3 use cases and stuff you're excited about a little bit later. But I know in your, you know, if you look at like big technology trends, that's kind of where you guys focus your attention. So today I just wanted to share some cool examples of the best stuff you're seeing. So where should we start? Is AI the obvious place to start here, or is there anything else you'd like to start with?
Yeah, I think AI has got to be the dominant one.
Yeah.
Recently, like what, last?
The last 6 months, especially.
Last 6 months, yeah. Couple of months.
I'll say, because we talked about an AI a little bit where, you know, AI has been around for a long time, right? Like, you know, Google, I was there for a long time. They were using AI in like a bunch of different stuff forever, right? And it's not like AI is a new thing, but the advancement in AI technology and the use cases are just compounding very quickly. I think one of the reasons is this thing called OpenAI, and they are basically allowing all the crazy work they've been doing, people can just tap into it and essentially use their technology and create new use cases. So I think we were going to share a few different examples. So if the question is, if I was saying to you, like, what is the most exciting stuff in that space that you're seeing? Like, are there any examples that come to mind?
Yeah. So set the scene a bit. I think the reason why it's gone, the reason why it's gone so crazy recently was that OpenAI completely opened up their APIs to like GPT-3 and DALL-E 2. So you suddenly have all the tech stuff that was happening over the last couple of years with like conversion AI, which then is now Jasper. All the tech stuff where you can ask it a question and give you a response, or you can give it a prompt and it will give you back like a paragraph or like an answer on a question. So this is obviously taken leaps and bounds forward. And now everybody has access to it. So everybody's now building on top of it. Whereas for the last couple of years, it's only been like restricted, invite only like API access. And even then it wasn't kind of opened up for those people. Whereas now
it's fully there.
Now it's fully there and everybody can sign up and play around with it, build on top of it. That side is exploding. But what's kind of been taking the headlines recently is like AI content creation, but expanding to like images and video and like in painting, which is basically take an image, like blank out some of it, and then give it a prompt, like tell it what to put there, and AI completes the rest. So that's the thing that's now taking everything by storm.
And so could we just, before you go, yeah, that's a great explanation, but you mentioned GPT-3 and DALL-E. Mm-hmm. Could you explain what those two are, or from what you know?
Not really. No.
Okay, fair enough. No. But like the use case, GPT-3 is more like text-based, right?
Yeah, GPT-3 is like the engine. So you give it, it's been trained on, let's say, hundreds of thousands of gigabytes of information on the internet, let's say like text-based. So you could give it a prompt, you could ask it a question, it'll give you something back. Or you could give it a specific, so write me an advert in this tone of voice with this keyword to this length, or describing like this problem or whatever, and it'll give you a result back. DALL-E 2 is basically from what my like meat-headed brain like understands of it, is basically like a similar sort of thing, but for images. So you could say, I want like a man standing on a fence getting hit by a rocket in the style of Picasso, and it would just create that thing.
Isn't that crazy?
Yeah, which crazy. which is pretty wild, because the texting was one thing, but people are kind of used to like asking Google stuff and getting answers. But now you have the image creation, which is a bit like, okay.
That's the next step. Well, I'll just give an example to build off what you were saying there. Because I remember when at Google, there was a big shift from, you know, 10 blue links to what was called like the knowledge graph, right? And so the example I always remember is, if you type in the name David Beckham onto Google, people think Google, let's say 10 years ago, understood what David Beckham was. But really what they were just returning to was, you know, just 10 blue links and maybe some images of what has been tagged as David Beckham and has backlinks, right? So that text, that string of text. And so what they developed eventually was an entity that is, David Beckham is a football player. Football is a sport. And he's married to a person called Victoria Beckham. She was part of the Spice Girls, which is a pop group, et cetera, et cetera. So you could then go from the next stage, instead of just saying, who is David Beckham? And it shows the Wikipedia page, to the next stage, which was, who is David Beckham? And then you delete that search and you'd say, who is his wife? And this was obviously like the verbal, you know, conversational search you could do as well. And it would just understand that that was a person and his wife, which is a human idea of two people being together for a lifelong period of time. And that was Victoria Beckham. And that sounds like such a simple upgrade, but it's an incredible upgrade, because you're going from just returning links to understanding. And that's why it was called knowledge graph. So I think that was one that always stuck with me as, oh, that's a way of upgrading the computer. And we went from just kind of base level computer understanding to next level. And now, like you said, images, that's another interesting use case. Video is even more complicated. There was also one recently, podcast.ai, I think. Did you see that one with Joe Rogan and Steve Jobs?
Yeah.
Did you hear it? Yeah. It was crazy. Wild. So for people who don't know what that was essentially them pulling in, you know, hundreds of hours or thousands of hours of Joe Rogan podcasts and speeches from Steve Jobs and putting them together to make it sound like they're having a real conversation, which is mad. It's like 20 minutes long.
Yeah, it's crazy. I think one of the things that Balaji said is, you're taking like with GPT-3, you're taking a search engine and turning it into a synthesis engine. So you don't need like when you search something, you don't want 55 million results over 55,000 pages on Google. Yeah. Like you just want like the thing you're looking for. So with GPT-3, if you give it a prompt, it'll just give you back the answer. So if you'd say, you're not going to get like five answers, it's just going to take everything that it's been trained on over on the internet, like hundreds of thousands of gigabytes of text-based data or information, and it's going to give you back like its best interpretation of what it is you want. There's no like options, it just is the thing.
Incredible.
So then that kind of puts into your head like, okay, like how do you get like that result? Like, is it possible to, I don't know, like manipulate that information somehow? Or is it taking like all sides of this information and then synthesizing it down into this one result, which is kind of nutty.
And then making it meld together in actually kind of a cool looking image as well, which is wild. So I don't know if this is related, because again, I'm a huge amateur in this, and you tell me if you don't know anything about it. But in the NFT world, there was a thing, still is, something called generative art, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And so does this link in with generative art in terms of like how generative art, from my understanding, was basically an algorithm creating a piece of artwork? It wasn't just like someone there painting. But are they using AI for that, or is that just like an algorithm? Do you know how that works?
Yeah. So generative art, I think usually in the majority of cases, is code. So it is like a piece of code which then runs that produces an image, and then.
Got it.
By altering the variables, you can come up with different images. The similar sort of thing happens with some people actually did physical generative art. So they fed commands to like a robot with like either like paint or crayon. So that was kind of like generative too. But with art that's generated with something like DALL-E 2 or Midjourney or like Stable Diffusion, it's text-based prompts. So you're not giving it code with parameters, you're giving it text-based prompts. So you could say like man sat on a fence in a meadow in the style of in 4K, this landscape, ultra realistic, and all these tweaks.
That's more conversation the way a normal human would speak versus you weren't a trained coder. And that's a big distinction, actually. Yeah, great.
So I guess like in some ways you could probably call it generative art, but I guess if you did something and called it generative art, the generative art community would probably take that not the way you intended. Yeah. I don't know. I haven't tried it yet.
Got you. Yeah. No, that makes sense. Yeah. Yeah. Well, no, I think that's, it actually brings up another parallel of, you know, what you originally started in that I know you from is MakerPad, right? And MakerPad, if people don't know what no code is, did a whole episode with Ben, the founder of MakerPad as well. So you can listen to that episode on CreateLab. But essentially, it was creating these tools that have been developed and are still being developed that allow people like me and you who, you know, you might be able to code a little bit, I'm not sure, but like basically awful. Create stuff with tools. And instead of having to write from scratch, you're using tools that giving you that capability.
Yeah.
So that I think is incredible trend overall, you know, just to move people towards creating stuff with less friction. And I think stuff like this is similar, right? Like for so many different use cases, like we talked about art, we talked about video, we talked about audio even. And even the other side is like, text based. So I know plenty of people, there's like copy.ai, which I've never used it, but I know they've got, I think they help people create like copy for the ads or something like that. Mm-hmm. Or anything else that you're writing copy for. Even Trung launched a thing recently, like a Chrome extension, which honestly I haven't used too much. I've just seen him.
Barely.
Exactly. Yep. He just shared that with us. And that is like really early beta, so I don't know how well it works, but it's essentially good. Summarizing stuff, yep. Right? So you've got a 10,000 word article and you can summarize that in bullet points, basically create an abstract. And I've heard it works pretty well from people who've told me they've used it. Mm-hmm. So these are all the sort of like tiny little kind of like areas where we're just starting to see things actually being use cases versus just, oh, there's this cool thing that these geeks have made, right? Like normal people like you and I and regular people who aren't coders are going to actually use this. And in 5-10 years, it'll be in all the tools we're using, which is really how things advance. So, that was just a few examples. I know you mentioned when we were just starting the call, you mentioned Jasper. What is Jasper? Because you said it was like an all-in-one tool. What does that mean?
Yeah, so I just want to like what you mentioned before about like barely and Trung. So I think the biggest trend we're going to see is that these like AI co-pilot tools. So basically you would go about like whatever it is you do. It could be you doing a podcast and then you doing, let's say, like research on a guest, and you're going over like LinkedIn or some like essays or some side of writing or their tweets or like whatever it is. I think everyone will have an AI companion to go alongside like what they're already doing just to make their work like easier, quicker, faster, better, like more accurate, like whatever it is. So for Trung, he's a big like, I'm just going to consume like as much information on the internet. I'm just going to like download the last week's worth of Reddit into my brain or like memes and all this stuff. And then he comes out with like the incredible stuff that he comes out with. So for barely, it's going to be his ideal co-pilot. So he's going to want to drop a YouTube link into barely, and it will give him back like the context of that YouTube video and the key points and summarize that down for him. So he can like in a couple of minutes, just like pull out two valuable things from the YouTube video. He's going to want to like drop in a Reddit thread or a Reddit link, and it'll synthesize that down for him. He can add that to his research doc. He'll add in like a blog post and it'll spit him three bullet points in or out. And then he's going to have his writer. So he'll be typing away, and then he wants to add in some context. It may be not not like the creative words that he's looking for, because they'll still come from the human brain, but it may be some like quote or some facts about the person who said the quote, which he wants to add in. So he'll use his AI to autocomplete like that next few lines, and then he'll tweak
it. Even like a prompt, right? Like, because if you do any writing, anyone listen to this, sometimes you're just there and you're like, you need a little inspiration to get going in a certain direction, or you're writing something and you're like, how do I take it this way? And sometimes even a prompt, which is, I think, something they're working on too. So yeah, I love that framing around Copilot, because that's something we can all think of, like assistant that's helping you make things more powerful, smarter. And then let's brainstorm a little bit more.
GitHub Copilot as well, just to add like a few instances. Yeah. So GitHub Copilot launch, and I think now like 47%. Maybe like completely off the mark here by like fucking miles.
It's all right.
Like,
yeah, let's go with it.
A large proportion of the code now committed to GitHub is completed like with Copilot, because let's say you don't like rewrite simple functions. You'll just use Copilot to like autocomplete that function, or you can write the beginning like syntax of a function, and then Copilot will complete it for you, because most of the work is templated. Most of your answers is on Stack Overflow. There's like an ongoing theme or ongoing joke that 80% of a developer's job is just Googling on Stack Overflow or Googling looking for answers. So Copilot solves that, and that's their version of your AI, like Copilot.
That's
so we're
amazing,
seeing now for writing, like for coding, for image creation, for graphic design, and there will be one of these for every single profession.
And could you think of like the legal profession, right? Like, can you think of how much, again, this is not, just to clarify, this doesn't mean it's replacing lawyers. I'm not saying that, but I mean, at least, well, in some cases it will, but I'm saying like, even just making your job easier. If you're a lawyer listening to this and you're taking in, you know, thousands of pages of documents, and you have something that can help you identify themes and trends that can help you go to the right place and to basically speed up your workflow, that is definitely something that's going to help. And then honestly, the other part is really how it kind of overlaps with Web3 with smart contracts. Like, there probably are going to be use cases where smart contracts are executing instead of a basic, you know, basically like a type of lawyer who is just doing a template of a contract that could easily be done by, you know, a template that is a robot essentially. So
same for like designers. There's a Copilot now called Ando, which plugs into Figma to allow like web designers to use Stable Diffusion to come up with images and design ideas and sketches like right inside of Figma, which is awesome. And yeah, like filmmaking with DALL-E 2 and music, and yeah,
that's exciting.
It's gonna be everywhere.
How do you feel about a lot of like being in the shiny object syndrome sort of person like me as well? Is you have to separate the hype from the real use cases and actual good stuff. So when you think of a big mega trend like AI, the same way we had with Web3 in the last couple of years, how would you separate the hype from the real stuff?
Yeah, there was another thing posted on Twitter, I think, is like a meme like comparing like AI to Web3, apart from like AI has users or something.
Yeah.
So I think it was a quote of saying all the Web3 founders or investors pivoting to AI and discovering users for the first time.
Yeah, that's hilarious. Yeah.
Yeah, which
being surprised they exist. Yeah.
Yeah, because with these AI products, it actually is, because they're not, it's not like a brand new industry. Like, AI has been used, is just being used to like augment existing industries, like let's say writing or like creating ads or writing blog posts or creating images or design. It's kind of bolt on and making everything a lot better, rather than Web3. Like the main argument was that it was like a solution in search of a problem rather than anything else. So yeah, the AI thing's interesting because like instantly there's thousands of use cases, and it will at some point be attached to every business.
That's a fair take. I probably agree with that. And so we'll come back to that Web3 stuff in a second, but like a few other examples. I know you'd mentioned like indie tools. You'd kind of separate them in all in one versus indie tools. So did you finish what you were saying before, though, before we move on to that?
Yeah, no, that's good.
So you had mentioned all-in-one tool, Jasper, you told me, and indie tools. We talk about avatar.ai, profilepicture.ai. So we can, you know, explain what a few of these are. But what is that distinction, the all-in-one versus like an indie tool? I'm assuming an indie tool is like a very specific use case. All-in is broader, but what would an all-in-one tool be used for? Is that similar to the Copilot idea, or is that something different?
So the only way I can think about it is that you've got everyone has like the same access now to a degree. Then there is still like some functionality that OpenAI, funny enough, I met one of the guys who works at OpenAI, head of like EMEA, like big accounts, I think. And there's still like a lot of functionality which is like gated for certain people, and only a few people have access, etc.
Oh, I can imagine. But it's like NASA and the government having access to crazy stuff versus
exactly.
a regular consumer. Yeah.
So we're getting like some stuff or a lot of stuff, but there's still some stuff that we're not getting. But with like a general tool like Jasper, they have access to the OpenAI API, but then they apply models on top to train it to do certain things better. So they will give you, creating a blog post, they'll say, give the topic of the blog post and give the first paragraph, then the second paragraph and the third paragraph, and then the keywords and then the conclusion. And then it will use that. They've already trained the model to come up with blog posts, as in like that style, like longer form perhaps. And they've trained the model on a lot of different use cases within Jasper. That's where you can get like more accurate results depending on what you're after. Whereas if you ask some like a different tool which was focused on a different outcome, like more professional for lawyers and strict speak, but couldn't really do much, I don't know, witty, or wasn't trained on witty stuff. So you can get different results. But
the expensive bit
is like training your own model. So if you wanted to do a specific one for law, you take the base model and then just train it on every single law paper, or every, let's say, commercial real estate law in the US. You just basically niche it down to that and just train it on all that.
That's the sound of another sale on Shopify, the platform trusted by millions of entrepreneurs to create their online store and so much more. They make it simple to sell to anyone from anywhere. Whether you're selling hats like I did or houseplants, start selling with Shopify and join the platform, simplifying commerce for millions of businesses worldwide. With Shopify, you'll customize your online store to your brand, discover new customers, and build the relationships that will keep them coming back. Shopify covers all the sales channels to successfully grow your business, from an in-person POS system to an all-in-one e-commerce platform, even across social media platforms like TikTok, Facebook, and Instagram. And thanks to their 24/7 support and free on-demand business courses, Shopify is here to help you succeed every step of the way. It's how every minute new sellers around the world make their first sale with Shopify, and you can too. As many of you know, I started my first business as an e-com store in the 2000s. And after all these years, there's nothing quite like that feeling when that first sale hits. You get that notification ping letting you know someone bought something from your store. It's a rush that is hard to beat. And when you're ready to take your idea to the world, you can do it with Shopify, the commerce platform powering millions of businesses down the street and around the globe. Now it's your turn to try Shopify for free and start selling anywhere. This is Possibility powered by Shopify. You can sign up for a free trial at shopify.com/creatorlab, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/creatorlab to start selling online today. That is shopify.com/creatorlab. This episode is sponsored by JustWorks. JustWorks makes it easier for you to start, run, and grow a business. Let me tell you how JustWorks can help your business. Running and scaling a business is easier when you have the right tools in place. JustWorks gives you the peace of mind in knowing that payroll will run smoothly, your team has access to high-quality benefits, and your business is getting the support it needs. JustWorks makes it simple to hire and manage remote employees across all 50 states. That's a cloud-based platform that enables managers and employees alike to quickly and securely access benefits, payroll and other HR functionality from anywhere, an intuitive self-service user experience that makes admin easier for your whole team, help when you need it with 24/7 expert support for you and your employees, access to certified HR consultants who can provide tailored guidance and best practices around managing your people, transparent pricing with no hidden costs so you always know exactly what you're paying for. Run your business with confidence. Take a look at Just Works transparent pricing by visiting justworks.com/pricing. That's justworks.com/pricing for details. Now let's get straight back to the show. And so when you say expensive, is that because you're paying for essentially the processing power to use the API or whatever, right? The same way in, you know, the cloud computing world, you pay for cloud computing power from AWS or whatever. And so with this, because I've seen Peter Levels, who made Nomad List, avatar.ai I think is his, and a bunch of other tools, he was showing like on Twitter how expensive his bill was getting for like the requests for people using his tool. It's not as simple as just like paying for web hosting, to put it in perspective, right? Like it's a lot more complicated because you're essentially renting computer GPUs, processing power.
Yeah, it's pretty GPUs. If anyone's actually doing this stuff full time, you should listen to this and just smashing your head against the wall. She has no idea what he's talking about.
That's fine.
I don't. There's different models that specialize in doing different things. And apparently, training the model to do a specific use case is like expensive things to do. And that's where somebody who does have technical know how can make their money. So let's say Peter Levels or Danny Postma, who are using. They're doing some custom stuff on top of DALL-E 2 or whatever they're using to layer on models and fine tune images to get the best results. So let's say I type in like one prompt in like a general like DALL-E 2 model, I'm going to get one thing. But then if you use their model or their product, which is trained on their model, you're going to get like a much better result just because it's been custom trained to that specific use case. And that's the expensive thing, apparently.
Love it. Love it. All right, cool. So, yeah, I mean, this is all super interesting, man. I mean, so I think we've given a few examples there. You just talked about Danny Postma, and we just mentioned Peter Levels too. Mm-hmm. I think this is an interesting idea. So you called it Indie Tools. So maybe I can share my screen if it works, because I was having an issue a second ago. If not, you might have to do it on yours, but let's have a look. Let's see. Oh no, that is not working.
What are we trying to get?
If you're able to share one of the, what it looks like, that would be great. But if not, no stress. But yeah, while you're pulling that up, so this is an example where you know, normally it looks like kind of a short term thing where people are paying. I don't know. Let's show this first. Yeah. All right. Here's profile picture AI. Have you used this yourself? Have you?
I haven't actually pulled all my pictures yet.
But you've probably seen examples posted, right?
Yeah, so Danny, you can see like he's given it like three images here to train the model, so it knows like what his face looks like, what his hair looks like, his style, and then it spits out a bunch of different like profile pictures and avatars. And what he does, I don't know how this works in the background, but he will feed his model or train it on different styles. So let's say, like down here, you could see like fantasy style or like
love it.
Fortnite style or cartoon or like whatever it is, or you name it. I think he's trained tons of these different styles, and you can pick out what it is, but he gives you all of them back and then you can choose which one you want.
Did you say this was Danny Postma, right?
This is Danny Postma, Danny P. And then...
Nice. I haven't spoken to him before, but he looks like we're following on Twitter. So I'll try to get him on because I'd love to get him to explain how he does all this. Super cool, man.
Yeah. And the other one worth mentioning, I think, is by Peter Levels. And there's a couple of other examples of this now with Lexica. Let me just try and bring it up.
Is it the one you shared on the Twitter one with me?
Yeah, but Peter Levels does another one called Interior AI. Again, like taking another model that is trained on doing interiors. So
It's like inside people's homes and stuff, right?
Yeah, so you give it an empty room or like a room of furniture, and then it will replace the furniture with different styles, like you like Japanese bathhouse. You want like an empty room, and it'll give you a Japanese bathhouse. So that's wild. And then yeah, this is the one where it kind of gets like really interesting on the profile picture side, because the profile pictures DALL-E 2, for some reason, I don't know the restrictions on it, but I think there was something to do with like generating human faces or something. It was a bit either like purposely restricted not to generate like human realistic faces. But Lexica, this model is, if I can just
Go for it. Yeah, and just while for people who are only listening, you can click the link in the show notes to go to YouTube to this timestamp. There'll be timestamps if you want to skip ahead. But here we go. This is the models all the way down. Here we go.
So these are completely generated. These are not real people.
I mean, that's crazy. That is insane. Wait, let's just sit and watch. Yeah, I mean, this looks like, you can kind of tell. I mean, it's incredible quality, first of all, right? Like this is, this picture here we're looking at could be someone on a boat, like on Instagram, right? Like just
there's
normal.
Still some like fine tuning with stuff. So faces was the first one. I think hands is another one. So you see here, like the hand is kind of like
the hidden
merging with the like the rail.
That's interesting.
But like models dressed as turtles. Like this is just comes up with this is like how ridiculous is that?
Incredible. So, yeah. Yes, that's wild. So. And so again, so this is, I just saw Ben say, this is fucking nuts. That's, that's the best summary of it. But yeah, that's a great example. And again, I mean, a lot of people might be listening to this who are like, oh, that sounds cool, but when's this ever going to get used? Is it just like a fun thing that people pay for just to get their pictures? But like, I think there's a lot of interesting use cases there potentially. Like, first of all, like most technology trends, gaming, you got to put that right at the front, right? Because if you look at the last 30 years, gaming and porn basically are the two areas that innovate before everyone else, or they use all the new stuff a lot of the time. But just obviously, for taking jokes aside, I mean, like gaming especially, like if you just think of, you know, like taking your pictures and turning them into something that isn't exactly you, and you're playing the game and you're actually in the game, like this is the stuff that's taking it to the next level. And that's hundreds of millions of people, if not billions of people, you know, playing games at that level. That's already a massive use case.
If then you think with like photography, so to jump in, but if you think of how, if you were to take a photo of a model in some clothes, like how much that would cost. You need a model, you need a location, you need a photographer, you need lighting, you need editing time. This is like thousands and thousands of dollars for like a set of images. And you can get a set of images on a trained model, which you've now used for all your images. In like what 10x less time for like a fraction of the cost.
Yeah, like ASOS, you can imagine them using, or like any you know, someone selling anything on the internet essentially, instead of having to go and get all that done, and the time and effort and the kind of opportunity cost. Obviously when it gets to a level where it doesn't feel like a fake person at all. I know there's examples of this in Asia. I'm pretty sure in China, where there was basically like a Chinese influencer that had been created for like a year, grew a massive following, and it was a completely, you know, AI generated
image.
Had
the filter on her face. Was it the old lady that had the younger?
I think so like that, which is wild. We're sharing these as like, the creator economy. These are like just interesting examples. And I know a lot of people listen to this who are just like anti social media and it's killing us all and keep the phones away from the kids. Like, I believe in all those things too, to a certain extent. But like we said in the beginning, like the reason we're sharing this is we're trying to see the little seeds that turn into bigger things. Yeah. And I think this is really interesting idea.
And another tool just to have, like, as a creator, just like another tool. Let's say you wanted to create some like merch or some like imagery to sell something.
Yeah.
You could, I think there's a few products where you could just take a photo of like a product on a table, and then you could then don't remove the background, which was the limit. Like until recently, you can remove the background, replace it with another background, and then turn that image into a video. So the AI actually adds the scene. So you could have the stable, the just still image. You take like 4 or 5 images around it with your phone, and then the AI inpaints the scene and it turns it into a video where it looks like there's a drone like going around it. And that's just wild. One man like with an iPhone in 5 seconds and like
incredible
whatever processing time it takes. But
and even just like honestly, in terms of opportunities, like that's why the copy AI guy, I forgot his name, but we've spoken in the past. I think they're already at 10 million in revenue plus in like the time we've spoken 2 years ago or something like that, which is incredible growth, right? Like in such a short amount of time.
And Jasper's a unicorn now. You speak Jasper's conversion, then AI. Jasper's a unicorn. Wow. They bought Danny Postma's Get Headline, which was a headline generator using GPT-3 like a year and a half ago.
Wow.
And now they're a $1 billion company.
That's crazy. And I can imagine, like, just honestly, if you think of like the most boring industries, right? Boring is maybe not the right word, but just like legal, I'll put that in that bucket, right? Like lawyers, like no offense, but yeah, the industry is a little boring compared to a lot of this other
fun stuff we're talking about. Long form legal blog post writing.
Yeah, exactly. But what I mean is incredible industry size, right? And like the amount of help that's needed in like speeding things up and automation and stuff like that. Even like a 5% increase would be a huge upgrade there. And it, honestly, the advertising space, just because I know a little bit more about it and like the copy.ai, I think was helpful. But what you just mentioned there, like the images, like the, especially after the Apple changes, like what's happened in the last like year or so, you know, advertising still works. Like it's still around. It's still, you know, a massive, massive industry, $600 billion industry or whatever. But any like marginal gains you can get from better creative, better testing, you know, like the idea you said there about looking like movement of an image where there's like a drone on top of it, that is perfect for something. If I didn't actually have to spend money on a drone to shoot it and there's a staff to actually do that, and I did it in an app essentially on my phone, like that is a thousand times cost saving. And something now I can test within ads, right? And that's going to probably make a big difference over the long term. So I think there's so many use cases here that we're not even probably thinking about.
Yeah.
Are there any others that come to mind before
we... I was going to ask, with the podcast one, we talked about Rogan and Jobs. Yeah. If you would do like an AI-powered podcast, which learn off of that's the Lyle Zadie's podcast library...
Get me in trouble, man.
Yeah. Who would you do your fake AI interview with?
Oh, like who would I interview?
That's a good question. Who would your AI interview?
So, okay, I'll say this. This is probably not relevant to most people. It's nothing to do with business, but just because I'm a massive Arsenal football fan, it would be like Thierry Henry or Arsene Wenger or something.
Yeah?
Just because, honestly, Arsene Wenger would be interesting because he's done enough interviews over the years and he's kind of like philosophical at times. And he's got like a distinct voice.
Yep.
And I think you could actually make quite an interesting conversation using
cool.
That would be like pretty cool actually to try.
Yeah,
and I think
wild.
By now, even with the level I've done like hundreds of podcasts, so like, and like thousands of hours, let's say. So that is enough to definitely.
Yeah. Your one would be ace. Like Rogan's is bang on because he's got so much time.
He's got so much. Yeah.
So it's training info. Like yours would be bang on.
That would be crazy. That would be scary, man. Get me cancelled.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't want to lose control of that model.
But all jokes aside,
anyone
though,
could
like,
do it, though, couldn't they? Anyone could
true.
Pull all of your content and create Blase AI.
That is kind of crazy. Well, that actually brings up a question because, like, there is a question around AI as a whole. People are worried, you know, Elon Musk level of it's going to take over the world, and there's a problem that it could actually, you know, be a really negative thing. Long term, where essentially the robots train the robots and we don't know the intent. I'm not exactly on that side, but I'm an amateur, so my opinion doesn't really matter. I'm curious on your take. Have you like ever read much about this? Or I know you listen to Lex's podcast a lot and he's Mr. AI. I'm curious if you've got any opinion on that.
Yeah, there was a really good one recently with Andre and Lex, who used to be the head of AI at Tesla. And I haven't read too deeply about it to have any like real like groundbreaking philosophical.
Yeah, more just your opinion.
Yeah, insights or whatever it is. But My general feel is that it's moving like a lot faster than anyone like realizes, especially the stuff we're not seeing. Like the stuff we're seeing is moving like at a rate of change, which is like, completely frightening. So let's say 4 weeks ago, we had DALL-E 2 spitting out images and the faces were just like all blurred and like the models were like not producing like accurate images of humans. They were just like pretty average. And now 4 weeks later, we have Lexica, which is pretty much like photorealistic and instant. And they've just got like a few kinks to work out with the hands and then that. And that's like pretty much bang on. And that's like, that's what we're seeing. There's also chat of GPT-4 being just around the corner. So they released GPT-3 kind of when it was like, they've stopped working on like GPT-3 and we're just going to release what we've got now. And then carry on working towards GPT-4, which I think is a league above GPT-3. So the stuff we're seeing is moving and like getting better, like way faster than I think anyone thinks, especially if they're not plugged into AI, let's call it AI Twitter all of the time, or Ben's
the coolest,
Ben's coolest part
on the internet. Yeah, exactly.
Coolest part of the internet. So yeah, like behind the scenes, like God only knows how fast these like models are being developed. And now because they're open, everybody's like churning away at it.
Yeah.
Whereas before it was some API partners, some restricted access, but now it's in the wild. It's
people are going to start doing wild stuff with it. Yeah. It's both good and bad. People can create the cool stuff we're talking about and other people can use it for bad stuff as well. But it's definitely an interesting time, man. Anything else on, I think we did a good job of covering lots of cool use cases there. Is there any last thing on AI where you're like, oh, that's probably worth a mention? If not, no stress, we can move on. But curious if there's anything else that's like you've been looking at, you're like, oh, that's a really cool idea. I didn't think of that.
Yeah, I think like one thing it really does is levels the playing field even more like globally from like a working resource
people, that's a good point.
Standpoint, because before there was a requirement for people to like speak English if they wanted to like access the English markets.
Good point.
But the cost of labor is a lot cheaper. So let's take example of works in the Philippines and these virtual assistants that people used to have or still have, and they're amazing, but the pay is a lot lower because the cost of living is a lot lower. So there was that, like, not like an arbitrage, people would call it an arbitrage, they'll hire people over there. But now, let's say if you have like a pseudonymous person in like India who has now got all these like AI tooling and can create content just as well as anybody else in any language they want to do. So let's say Jasper.ai, you can prompt it to create something and you can output in any language. So the translation element is kind of removed because you can input in your native language and output in your client's language, which is wild. So if you are working like a susceptible job in the US, you've now got like an attack on your wage by a lot of people who now have access to these tools.
In a global market, that's a great point. I didn't think of that. And I think, the question I have though on the translation part, essentially what you're saying there, like, I mean, even just traveling, I mean, you live in Spain, so we'll get to that in a second. Oh, sorry, Mallorca, but you speak Spanish there. Do you speak any Spanish?
Getting there. Getting there.
Okay. Yeah. Well, but you've probably used Google Translate and you've probably used Google Translate daily. Conversation mode.
Yeah.
And when I was in Argentina, like no one speaks English where I was, right? Like for 2 months, and I would just be on the daily. And the cool thing is you can do it offline too. You can download the whole language, which is insane. And you just speak into it and it will in English, and then it will translate that out in Spanish. And look, it's not 100%, right? It's probably 60 to 80% the way there. Like people can roughly get what you're saying. But sometimes they're looking at you with a blank stare because like, what did you just...
That's getting better a lot quicker now as well.
And I think also the more people use it, the faster it gets trained, right? With the audio side as well.
Yeah. Is that like a leap, like a similar leap from So let's take a transcription tool. Let's say that the best ones were probably like 80%, like not even that, maybe 70% accurate. Yeah. Which like, if you do like a fully automated content like process of just uploading a podcast, feeding it into a translator and just publishing it, it would be like 70%, like there'd be full stops and like all this stuff. So you have to go
especially
through and change
with my
all.
Accent, man. It's not trained on the accent. Descript even now is not pulling up my thing, but go
then,
on, yeah.
Google released Whisper, which is then like, it's gone from like 70% to 95-97%, it was 70% like a couple of weeks ago, and now Whisper exists and the translation's up like 95% plus. So that leap alone in a month or like a couple of months has been nuts, and I think we'll just see these big chunks, whereas before it was good, now it's excellent, like across all these industries, like translation are probably one of them too.
Yeah, that's wild. Yeah, I didn't even know that one. I'm going to have to check that out. All right, mate, that's perfect on AI. Thanks again for sharing all of those. I do want to, we'll close out soon here. So before we move on completely, I'm curious just to close the loop on the Web3 NFT stuff. You can hear the sirens in the background, by the way.
Man.
So I was warning you earlier. It's like the time of day as well. We're going to get some
sound.
Dark side sound, exactly. Yeah, someone's there, that audio whisperer, they're like, oh, it's on this street Brooklyn. He lives on a corner, it's got a pink thing outside. I'm really giving it away now.
Garden
but
boys.
Anyway, yeah, exactly. So on the Web3 side, we talked a little bit about how you're feeling with the tech stuff, but I'm gonna ask like a point blank question. As someone who's had a lot of money in Ethereum, maybe Bitcoin back in the day, I don't know if anymore. How do you feel about actual holding assets on, whether that is Ethereum, crypto, Bitcoin, anything else right now?
As in like holding them as a instrument, I
as
guess?
As a not investment advice, investment for yourself, yeah. That you're holding in your own portfolio. Because to remind people, you made $1.3 million equivalent at the time. Mm-hmm. In, I guess it was ETH at the time, right?
In ETH,
right? So I don't know if you sold it then or sold a part of it to make sure you secured the bag and you moved to Spain.
Secure the bag, but yep.
Is that what
Pretty
you did?
Exactly so, that.
All right, yeah. That's smart. I'm glad you did that. So
traded, obviously that was peak euphoria, so I ended up trading out of a lot of it and then cashed out along the way. It was what, like almost a year and a half ago now, but managed to secure the bag and relocate the family over to Mallorca. With being out of Brexit, especially from the UK, is not a trivial thing. So you need special visas and all that scenario, but 4 kids into a nice school and all that good stuff. So
amazing, man. Congrats, man. That's so good to hear.
50 days of sun.
When we met, you said you wanted to do that one day, and it was like you moved it up. 10 years.
Yeah,
or
we
something.
Fast-tracked it, I think, by about 10 years last year, which is great. That was
incredible.
The biggest win like we could have ever wished for.
Yeah.
But as far as ETH, I think at the moment I'm pretty much all like just cash. I think everything's flipped from mid last year to having like trying to get a return on stuff to now just sitting in cash if you can and just trying not to like lose it.
Yourself.
Yeah. And just if you can minimize downside at the moment, I think I'm not an investor. Obviously.
Absolutely not investment advice. Like, I'm just curious to get your opinion as someone who had a good amount of money in this space.
Yeah, completely new, but I've pretty much sold everything back into cash at the moment. And then, just seeing how this whole scenario is just going to settle for a bit, because like at the moment, it just seems like freaking like bomb after bomb, like rug after rug. And to be like honest, it's been interesting the last couple of weeks with FTX blowing up. Is over the last year and a half, everyone laughed at people trading JPEGs and like buying monkey pictures, and you got like a former Bored Ape on the wall. But where anybody who's actually done well now is the people who have self-custody their own shit. So like Bored Ape owners, like if people like Laugh at them or whatever, or people who are owning like CryptoPunks and stuff, you have to self-custody it. Like you're not putting it, giving it to anybody else. It has to be on a ledger in your own possession with your own private keys. And they were the ones that being mocked by, let's say, people who hold like a certain currency who keep it on a centralized service, earning like a 4% yield. And these ones have now all been rugged. So like really the JPEG enthusiasts.
JPEG guys are laughing last, I guess.
All right, apart from they're down 9% on other assets.
Yeah, I was just about to come back to that. I was about to say, to keep it real, NFTs down are down pretty hard.
Apart from 100%.
And ETH is down 70-80%, so everything's done. Anyway, but I mean, is the global economy. I mean, the crazy thing is, we talk about NII every week, but if I said to you minus 91%, 71%, and 61%, and between Facebook, Peloton, and Bitcoin, which one's which? And to save you the... I mean, obviously, these numbers change all the time. But
Peloton 91.
Peloton 91 from his high. Yeah. I think Facebook 71. 70. And Bitcoin, the day I looked, which was a week or two ago, was 61, which is still terrible. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah, it's mad, isn't it?
I mean, Facebook, honestly, to me, Facebook won, especially just because, you know, last week, was it 11,000 people got laid off? Stripe layoffs, Twitter, half the company laid off. Amazon apparently is laying off 10,000 people. I mean, these are like the companies that were growing the economy, right? Like Amazon, Facebook, Stripe. But like, you can't think of, you know, many companies better than them.
Like if you're going to put some stock into stuff that you use every day and you think it's like a core tenant of the tech industry or the 21st century, you're thinking
and
like
a fairly
spot in, or like Shopify, like Stripe, Facebook, like all these Google.
Yeah, even
you
Google
still
got
absolutely wrecked. Like,
exactly. And so, without turning this into an episode, if you're interested in that, you can subscribe to Not Investment Advice, where we talk about it all the time. But the summary is, it wasn't just because all of a sudden these businesses became bad businesses. It's because of a global macro trend. It's because the Fed put up interest rates and the way you value growth stocks changes.
Walking around with a $5 billion increase on his portfolio.
Yeah, that's ridiculous.
He was right all along.
Oh my god, that's hilarious. The way you just said increase, they cracked me up so much. It was so in denial. There is a crazy time, but all jokes aside, obviously it's actually a very, very sad time. I know like plenty of people who just lost their jobs in those companies and having to figure out what they're doing, and they've got families to feed, etc. But
Creator mode, though, mate. So, man, JB, Mr. Jack Butcher's been writing the playbook on this for years.
That's true. Exactly.
Isn't he?
So, he has. And so the kind of like thing I want to kind of like close out on is your move, like more of a personal take on. You moved to Mallorca. Something I've thought about doing, maybe not necessarily Mallorca, though I'm sure it's beautiful, but just in general, where I would land longer term. And I think the global, the wider trend, the macro trend of like moving out of like the most expensive places, unless you really need to be there. Like I've been doing remote work since before COVID. And we were already doing it. Like I said, we were in Argentina and Mexico City and all these different places. I will say we moved back to New York because we missed having a home. Like we wanted to be in one place. And I love New York. I think it's great. Even though it's expensive, it's still amazing. Got lots of friends here. The vibes are great. People are fun. There's a lot of crazy stuff happening. I love it here. So it's not to say I'm like not bullish on New York. I definitely am. But I'm curious, like what was your logic around taking your whole family? And I don't know how, if we're allowed to say how many kids you have, but you have like multiple
four kids.
Wife, and you were ready to go settle down somewhere. So I'm just curious like how you thought about that decision, how you landed up in Mallorca specifically.
So we've been kind of situation, we've been coming for years, like love it. It was the dream like one day to think about moving here. And then COVID struck and we moved from like middle of England. So England, like notorious, like shit weather, like sub 50 days of sunshine in a year. And that's not good. That's actually like really quite bad for you in terms of
you're not getting
enough sunlight to just like not be depressed. So
definitely
it just got so really down. And then mid last year, we were just like sat and we took all the kids to school one day and it just hammered it down with rain and wind. And we were like halfway through doing up our house at the time. We had a project house and just like depressed, looking out the window, just like, what is this? Like, surely this is not it. Like, we had like had a big financial win. I just said, oh, should we just move? He's like, wife said, like, can we? I was like, yeah. Figure it out. It's like, where should we go? Like, oh, how about Mallorca? So like, yeah, long story short, let's just do it. So we put the house on the market, took the kids, found the international school for the kids, moved across, sorted the visas out. And it wasn't like until we got here, like we've got like what's called like an entrepreneurial visa. So if you're bringing now, we're not in the EU, so it's hard. You have to have a special visa, golden or entrepreneurial visa. There's no digital nomad visas yet. So you can't live here unless you have a special visa. Managed to get that because you've got an innovative company, which is cool. And
how's that work? Just real quickly, is that like you have to obviously work with lawyers to, you know, meet the criteria or whatever, but is there like a minimum amount of money you need to bring there? Because I know like Lisbon is doing this in Portugal, that they actually do have a digital nomad like incentive. I don't know if it's a visa or whatever.
Yep.
But Peter Levels, he also has a whole company to help people relocate
there, Portugal. Yeah.
And so is it literally, if you don't mind me asking, is it like you need to have a certain amount of money to bring there to say like, hey, we're bringing money to your economy? Or like, yeah, is there like more criteria there?
So yeah, a couple of things. There's two basic visas you can get. You either get like a non-lucrative visa, which means that like, you can't work, which is like, well, like obviously not. The golden
just
visa,
retirement,
which is,
basically.
Yeah, 500,000 golden visa is 500,000 euros into a property in cash, like unmortgaged, like all right. And the other one is called an entrepreneurship visa, which if you have an innovative company and you're going to hire people in Spain, hire Spanish people and help bring the Spanish economy forward in terms of an innovation standpoint, you write a business plan, you go through lawyers, you apply, you get all of your documents translated and stamped.
Oh, sick.
And
wow.
It's like a big thing and it costs quite a lot of money. You need, I think, 10,000 euros per person into a Spanish bank account in cash to say that you can afford to live here. A year paid up front in a house, a year paid up front medical insurance, all this stuff. So no chance that we could have done it without the wins from before. And then you can get, I think it's up to, it's 5 years initially with like a gap, 2 years just to basically meet with them and say you are actually building the company you said you're going to build and following like the business plan that you submitted. And then you can stay without having to put like cash into a property or anything. You can just run.
Wow, that's really helpful. I'm glad I asked that because I didn't know. Because I guess a lot of people I know have been thinking about similar stuff, whether that's going, you know, like, I know a few people that moved to Mexico City, for example. In Europe, a lot of people moved to like Lisbon and even the south of France, which is a different category, but another thing where people are doing.
It's a lifestyle. Like the biggest thing like for me. I didn't realize I think I honestly still burnt out now from last year. Like some days I just like sat at the computer and just thinking, like, I don't remember being like this, like exhausted and like all over the place. But I think last year NFT market just fried all things dopamine related. So you're can't concentrate on reading anything or I don't know. It's something really weird happened.
That's a good point. Do you think that was the NFT stuff or is it just generally internet usage?
No, NFT stuff because that is...
Because you've got that financial kick as well.
You've got the financial
kicks,
you've got the Discord, you've got the FOMO. Like, I don't know, like FOMO is like a phrase that you like throw around, but it is like not just like the fear of missing out, but the chance of like a life-changing trade, which I got lucky and caught one and that literally changed our life.
You also got some Bored Apes, no?
We got a couple. So Bored Apes and Ether Rock, and then lives changed. And I think that just that having the possibility of that for a period of time just nuked everybody like mentally.
Yeah,
which is why now when the financial incentives dropped off and the volumes dropped off, everyone is just kind of like checked
not
out of everything in this just because they're absolutely fried, frazzled, and just taking a break. And it wasn't until we got to Spain where the lifestyle is like a lot more. Everyone thinks if you move from England or like New York to somewhere like Spain, they're just like, well, literally, what is everyone doing all day? Like, where is everybody?
Are they just chilling? Are they just eating tapas and having naps at 3 p.m.?
Like, the answer is yes.
Yeah, which is incredible.
But then you're like, then you like slowly like slow down. You're thinking like, this is like how you're probably like supposed to live.
To be. Oh,
you wake up, like you go, like drop the kids off, like you have a coffee, then you like exercise, you get some sun. Like it's sunny 300 days a year. You know you're going to get sun every day, and then you have time to work, and it's just more balanced. Whereas, back in the UK where we were, because it's rainy, you're just like inside all the time working, and then we used to go like get the kids, have the kids inside, like. Food always inside, like
different,
brutal,
different gravy, mate. Well, first of all, congrats, man. That's really nice to hear that that moved up 10 years, and it sounds like a great life you've built there. I'm just curious, thanks, like, man. What you went into it thinking it would be like versus reality, like, because obviously there's just the shiny, you know, pun intended, pictures you see, and you're like, wow, everything looks like a holiday forever.
Yeah.
And not everyone even wants to be on holiday forever, right? But I'm curious, like, what that has been like in reality versus what your expectation was.
I think we kind of knew what we were going to get because we've been here quite a lot.
You also spent a bunch of time there, right? Yeah.
Yeah, we did like a summer here like a few years ago. We did like 7 weeks with the kids. So we tested out. But yeah, living here is a lot different. It's a lot more like inconvenient, but quite nicely so. So let's say in England, you can get Amazon, like next day delivery guaranteed, same day delivery, like most of the time. So you're almost like constantly like jacked up because you're thinking, I can get this like now, like now, like now. And like, if you don't get it now, you're like,
well, why not?
This is shit. And then you get like angry, like, well, if I can't get it, if it's going to come in 3 days, I'm going to not have it. And I'm going to pay more to have it tomorrow. You don't need everything tomorrow.
Yeah, that's a great point. That's a really good point.
Just chill out. Some days here, you go to the bank and it's just not open. It's just a sign on the door saying, nope. You're like, okay.
So that's like on a Tuesday. It's not even it's not a Saturday. It's just
it's Tuesday.
We're not coming in today.
Tuesday morning, like no appointments after 9:30. Like, I guess I'll try again tomorrow. Like, okay, cool.
That's hilarious.
So it's almost, it forces you to slow down. But yeah, once you kind of get attuned to it at the start, it's like you're really like annoyed that you can't do stuff as easy. Like online stuff's all a bit like more awkward, like deliveries a bit more awkward. Things like tradespeople like turning up to like fix something is just like they won't come, and then they'll turn up at like Sunday at 2 p.m. You're like,
what are you doing?
Why are you here? Yeah. Like, why did you even let us know that you're coming? So culture-wise, lifestyle-wise, it's a bit of getting used to, but so far in a good way.
That's amazing, man. Yeah, that's very cool to hear. Listen, man,
languages,
we could talk.
Languages
for,
languages.
Yeah, well, actually, last one. Yeah, on the language. You said, have you been learning?
Been learning.
Little Duolingo action.
Little Duolingo action. Do 37 day streak on Duolingo.
There we go. Wow, that's the move. Have you got a teacher or anything?
Not going to teach you yet. Just wanted to get the basics kind of going. At the school, kids are in international school. So they teach, they have lessons in English, Spanish, Catalan, and Mandarin. All of them have it from kids.
Wait, say that again. English, Spanish,
Catalan.
Mandarin. Because Barcelona.
Yeah.
That's wild. That is incredible. That's going to be so good for them.
Yeah, I know. So we've got to learn, otherwise they're going to be able to speak. And
they'll be talking about you behind your back in the room. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah, and the kids
love
Chinese.
Look at Dad's beer belly.
Yeah, look at that bastard. So they're learning it. And also because of the kids that go to an international school, a lot of them have moved here for the same reason as us, and they will be. There's a lot of like Germans, Spanish, Scandinavian, so Norwegians, Swedish. From everywhere, Chinese. So a lot of the children and parents speak multiple languages. It's
that's amazing.
It's a trilingual school, so it's just a normal thing.
Getting
so
ready for the world in 10 years, man, or the world today, I guess.
Getting ready for the overlords in the next few years, yeah.
Did it get them coding at 4 years old as well? Are they on there getting the little game
made?
Got some
robotics classes on the go as well at school, yeah, which is good.
Incredible.
Yeah, it's cool. It's good.
That's amazing, man. Well, that sounds like a great option for a lot of people that... Yeah, I wish... I want to learn more about this. I might ask you more questions after this, but...
Yeah,
this is awesome, man. Well, listen, man, we're hitting the time now that we've talked about a lot of different stuff. Appreciate you coming on. I'm glad we got to finally do this. Where can people go to sign up to the community if they're interested?
Go to shinyobjects.gg and sign up there. You can follow us on Twitter, shinyobjectssc, I think, or just follow me on...
Your Twitter is at Tom Osman,
Tom Osman, yeah. O-S-M-A-N.
That's an easy one. But I'll share it in the show notes as well.
Nice,
but yeah,
mate.
Thanks for coming on, mate. We'll definitely do this again, and hopefully we'll get to do this in Mallorca, UK, or New York sometime.
100%.
Yeah, really appreciate all the support you've always given as well for the pod and
both the pods. Congrats on all the successes on both
thanks,
the pods,
man.
As well.
Appreciate it, mate. Yeah,
it.
But yeah, we will speak again soon, and if you enjoyed this, let us know on Twitter, and I'll see you on the next one. Cheers.
Pleasure, mate.
Hope you enjoyed the show. Make sure you're subscribed on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or your favorite podcast app. You can also watch all of these visually, plus bonus clips on youtube.com/creatorlabfm. If you enjoyed the show, let me know what you think. You can say hello to me on Twitter. I'm at BZaidi, BZAIDI, or creatorlabfm on any other channel. I really appreciate your help spreading the word with your friends and colleagues. It helps to get this out to more people and allows me to get better guests for you guys. And lastly, if you want access to exclusive content and free giveaways like the recent books that we gave out, make sure you're subscribed to the email list. I'll send out an occasional email with lessons learned from the episodes. So if you're interested in that, and of course the free giveaways, who doesn't like those, go to creatorlab.fm/subscribe. Until then, I'll see you on Twitter and speak to you next week.